Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. You're listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And hello, everyone. It's 4 minutes past the hour of 10 p.m. on Monday, Memorial Day, here on the East Coast of the United States. And you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show. If you were with me on Friday, I, you know, spoke about Memorial Day and alluded to the fact that, you know, people say Happy Memorial Day and people have barbecues and they meet with friends, they go to the beach, they go to ball games. Although some baseball teams in Major League Baseball have the day off, which I don't know when that started, like the 4th of July. 4th of July and Memorial Day used to be days for doubleheaders back when I was a kid. Now they don't even play doubleheaders unless there's a rain out. But now they give them the day off, which I don't get. But nonetheless, it's a holiday where it's solemn, certainly, but you spend it with friends if you can and relatives and in celebration, I guess, but always hopefully keeping in your mind how you're able to do that, how you're able to celebrate, how you're able to gather, how you're able to be free enough to do that. And you would not be at that barbecue or that picnic or that ball game or whatever without the sacrifices made by those who put on the uniform and served our country and made the ultimate sacrifice in the case of Memorial Day. So, you know, when I hear people say Happy Memorial Day, I cringe a little bit. I don't know that you have to wish someone a happy Memorial Day, but a meaningful Memorial Day would be more appropriate, but I wouldn't hold my breath for that to be the case. Now, unfortunately, I mean, obviously, we mourn those who and celebrate those who gave their life for this country. Of course, Barack Obama in 2008 said he sees those who made the ultimate sacrifice. He sees them sitting there today, which, of course, is bizarre. I guess he didn't know what Memorial Day was and what it meant for those who made the ultimate sacrifice. Nonetheless, we have another problem, and we've had this problem, and today is a great day to talk about the problem, and that is veterans who commit suicide. It was recently reported that the veteran suicide rate may be double than what we hear from the federal government and their estimates, because of undercounting related to drug overdose deaths and service record errors. And this is something that we really do need to talk about. And it's just incredible when you think about it and when you hear the numbers. And we are very privileged to have with us one of those people who served his country still and is still serving his country through doing this. His name is Michael R. Carmichael. He's the president, CEO, and founder of Check a Vet. He is CW4, which is Chief Warrant Officer for U.S. Army Special Forces, retired. And Michael, as I say to everyone who put on the uniform and served, you're a better person than I am, and I very pleased to have you on the show tonight. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you having me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the numbers. They're just shocking. I mean, even if we had one a month, one a week, whatever. I mean, just to think that these veterans kill themselves when they get home after immediately after a while, whatever. Give us your best estimate and what you believe are the accurate numbers of U.S. veterans who commit suicide.
So, Steve, today I was watching the news, one of my favorite news channels, and I was really frustrated to see that they used the number 30,177 in the context of veterans who have ended their life by suicide since 9/11. I literally cringed and made fists in both hands because that number is so, so far off. The number actually came from an old Brown University study that came out in 2001. It's actually buried in the middle. The context of that number is just 9/11 era veterans. So what that means is only service members and veterans who joined after 9/11 even counted in the study. So if you look at the number, and I really tried to find the number for about 18 months and then patiently and determined to find something, I continued to pore over the VA's appendixes and methodologies in their 2022 suicide prevention report. Well, finally, I found an appendix all the way in the back. I mean, it was hidden under three or four things. And it's appendix 508. And in that, they actually break down the veteran suicides per year since 9/11. So with that in hand and a calculator in my other hand, I added it up. Now, the VA's number with that count is 127,560. How does that compare to the 30,177?
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's a stunning number. It really is a stunning number. Let me ask a simple question first for those of us who don't know certainly as much as you before we get to your organization and what you're trying to do to prevent all this. What is the motivating factor? I mean, we may not know the answer, but in your view, from what you do know, people you have talked to, cases you have learned about, what drives the veteran, the average veteran, or most of the veterans who do commit suicide, what drives them to do it?
I think that the biggest suicide risk factor among veterans is isolation. Isolation leads to depression and anxiety. And that requires more medication, and it requires more appointments with, you know, the doctors there at the VA.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the VA and the government. I mean, the government obviously is not doing enough. And I mean, I've heard the horror stories. As a matter of fact, we have a soundbite that we're going to play in a minute from a retired Army sergeant named Joe Contesano. Who was who put out something on TikTok and then was on Fox to talk about what he had put out on TikTok. I'll let you hear that and react to it in a second. But I mean, the VA, I guess they mean well, and they always have, and administration after administration has tried. But I mean, we don't do nearly enough for veterans who should be treated like kings and queens for what they have sacrificed and risked and done with their time for this country.
Steve, you're absolutely right. I mean, nobody deserves it more than our nation's heroes. But to talk back to the numbers and the VA, that number of 127,000, that number actually is the VA's number. So with the release of a study called Operation Deep Dive, you spoke earlier to an underreporting of a factor of two. Actually, Deep Dive peeled it back so far that they assess that the VA is underreporting the number by a factor of 2.4. So simple math takes the 127 and turns it into 306,000 veterans. So wow. Identifying the scope of the problem is really the first thing that I need to do as the president and CEO of a nonprofit to prevent veteran suicide. Because if people don't know or aren't talking about how bad the problem is, then that's the problem.
Yep. Well, and I'm glad you brought it up because I was coming back to that full circle. Michael R. Carmichael, our guest, is the president, CEO, and founder of Check a Vet. So tell us about the organization. Tell us what the organization does and tries to do when it comes to preventing these numbers?
So initially when the idea came to me, you asked me earlier, what's the one contributing factor that I think is the worst? And I answered isolation. So I thought, if nothing else, by getting people involved in their veterans' lives, we can break down that isolation. We can replace that isolation in a meaningful and routine way with companionship. Okay. So, but in order to do that, really, we have to do three things at Check a Vet. One, we were talking just a bit earlier about raising awareness to veteran suicide. How bad is it? Where is it? Who's it affecting? Then two, we need to get people to want to be involved in veterans' lives, because sadly right now, most people aren't. And then three, once we get people into a front row seat with their veterans, we have to educate them on what the nuance, suicide risk, and suicide protective factors are, so that they can help guide that veteran down a safer path and away from danger.
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. And how long has the organization been around?
It's kind of amazing that we've only been around for 2 years, but we've got so much traction because, you know, I'm truly blessed to have a guy like Chris Miller, former Secretary of Defense, and a team of PhDs in mental health and psychology, who've really gravitated towards the mission, and maybe somewhat a little bit me, but they really see our approach as a way to actually prevent veteran suicide.
Yeah. And at the end, I'm going to ask you how people listening can help. I do want you to hear this. This is, like I said, retired Army Sergeant Joe Contesano. He put out something on TikTok, which was much longer, but I just have a very abbreviated soundbite of it. And then it goes right into him talking about it on Fox. So give a listen here to Cut 306.
The last 6 years, dude, the VA has continued to let me down. I just want some continuity of care with mental health providers.
If you want to see a mental health provider outside of the VA, because you're, you know, you put yourself in my shoes where you go through 5 and 6 providers over the course of 15 months for a multitude of different reasons, you know, and you decide you want to find somebody in your community, somebody stable, you know, have a continuity of care, that that you generally have to go through your primary care provider, right? So you make an appointment that can take upwards of 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes a month, depending on where you're at, if your VA is busy. And then they will go ahead, go through, and push you off to community care. Mm-hmm. And at which point, community care can take up to 2 weeks to go ahead and contact you. Then they're going to go ahead and push out the referral to your, you know, prospective clinic. Then you have to wait for that clinic to accept a referral, review your file, onboard you, and then make an appointment, you know, potentially 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on how busy they are.
Now, that's not only ludicrous. I mean, that's bureaucratic, red tape, runaround bullcrap. First of all, if you're getting mental health help, you want the same person. If you like the person, if you're going to go back to the person, you need the same person. You can't keep telling your story from the beginning over and over, or have them read a file and take it from there. That's not how people don't go to different shrinks in a private setting, you know, different guy every week or every month and pick up on the notes from the guy before. That's just insanity. And then to be shoved around and pushed off for weeks and weeks, as he's describing, when you need the help, you need the therapy, you need the outlet, the talk. I mean, no wonder. It's a sin. It really is a sin.
Absolutely, Steve. But what Joe's story shows us is the VA is acting as the single point of failure in veterans' mental health care. We don't need to have that. When I first saw this video, I was heartbroken, but filled with hope, because if we can develop a base of support around veterans with family, friends, and neighbors, then they don't have to wait for that next appointment with the VA. This base of support is a 24/7, 365 group of people who really want to look after the veteran, who appreciate that veteran's services and sacrifices, and want to do anything that they can to help the veteran.
Well, tell us, Michael, how we could help, how people listening could help you help them.
Thank you, Steve. From the very beginning, I really only wanted to convey a message: get involved in your veterans' lives. But it's difficult to get this message out. No one's going to share the message for free. So please, please, please go to our website, look through it. If you believe in the work that we're doing and think that it'll matter, give us a contribution. Help us share this message with all of America, because without your resources, it's just going to be a good idea buried in a website underneath the rest of the internet.
Well, give the website again, please.
It is checkavet.org. Again, checkavet.org.
Yep. Very, very easy. Listen, Michael, I hope you'll come back. Have your people reach out to me again. I really want to follow this. I really want to see progress. I know it wouldn't, if there's none, it's not your fault. I know you're doing the best you can, obviously. But I just really wish people, I mean, you know, I don't want to go there right now, and I want to get into that discussion right this second, not with you. I don't want to put you on that spot, so don't comment. I'm just saying, I'll just say we give billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars away and spend it on questionable things, and our veterans are getting screwed. That's all I'll say, and it's a shame. So, Michael, God bless you and the work you're doing, and I hope everybody does check it out, and we'll speak again, okay?
Hey, thank you, Steve. You're my hero today because you are raising awareness to veteran suicide.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. More than you know. Michael R. Carmichael, ladies and gentlemen, president, CEO, and founder of Check a Vet. And I got to admit, I had to look up CW4. I had to look it up so I could, you know, chief warrant officer, and four is a category, I think the highest. U.S. Army Special Forces retired, and quite a man, quite a career for him in the military. He joined the Montana National Guard at 17. He had to get signed consent from his parents in high school. 22 years. In the U.S. Special Forces, 22 years, and he's now devoting himself to this, which is so important. All right, folks, we're coming back. Steve Malzberg, we are here live. It's Memorial Day on TNT Radio.
Rick Munn on TNT Radio.
The city of Chicago is being hit extremely hard by the illegal migrant crisis. Currently, the city has no available shelters left to put people in, and the police stations are being used as temporary shelters. So they're actually going to be sticking people into police stations. And with the crime rate in Chicago being so high, they're already overcrowded with criminals. So, you know, what's it going to take? What's it going to take for people to stop this nonsense? Okay, literally, when there's literally nowhere to put anyone, they still say the doors are open. It's mad. That's going on in Chicago. It's happening in England and, of course, Ireland. There's two hashtags trending. Ireland is full on one hand and Ireland for all on the other hand. It's fair enough saying Ireland for all, but there's nowhere to put them. The Irish people, homeless people, 10,000 don't have a place to stay. They're going to house an extra 100,000 illegals coming in. Where are you going to put them?
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You're the one, baby. You're the one.
Oh, yeah, baby.
No, seriously, honey, you're the one.
Oh, yeah.
You're the one for me. You're the one who's going to carry our baby. You're the one who's going to go through all those intense hours of excruciating, painful labor. Not me. You're the one who's going to deal with those smelly, dirty diapers. You're the one who's going to have to pull herself out of bed at 3 in the morning because the baby is crying out to be fed. And you're the one who's going to have to find daycare so you can go to work to pay for all the stuff the baby needs. You're the one.
Still think having a baby as a teen is a good idea?
Yeah, baby. You're the one. You're the one who's going to have to make sacrifices. Yeah.
Go to babycanwait.com to learn how to prevent teen pregnancy. This message brought to you by United Way of Greater Milwaukee.
You're the one.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. So I just want to express my disgust with Donald Trump, who posted on Truth Social for Memorial Day, and I'm going to read it to you. Happy Memorial Day to all, but especially to those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for the country they love. So far, so good, right? And to those in line of a very different but equally dangerous fire, stopping the threats of the terrorists, misfits, and lunatic thugs who are working feverishly from within to overturn and destroy our once great country, which has never been in greater peril than it is right now. We must stop the communist, Marxist, and fascist pigs at every turn and make America great again. I know what he's talking about. What, no matter what he's talking about, everything he said is legitimate, but it has nothing to do with Memorial Day. He started off and he should have stopped after, especially to those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for the country they love, period. The rest should have been on a different post, on a different day, independent of Memorial Day. It's ridiculous. It's pathetic. It cries out for help. It's a cry for help. It's just beyond disgusting. Now, some think he's talking about himself, and whether he is or he isn't, I understand what he's saying, and we are in dangerous times, and we do have to stop the communists, the Marxists, and the fascist pigs at every turn. But that's got nothing to do with Memorial Day. That has nothing to do with Memorial Day, which, by the way, you go back to the media. I posted this too. You go back to 2018, when Trump was president, and he tweeted this out. You ready? Happy Memorial Day. Those who died for our great country would be very happy and proud how well our country is doing today. Best economy in decades, lowest unemployment numbers for blacks and Hispanics ever, and women in 18 years, rebuilding our military, and so much more. Nice. Now, that was all about him. That was happy Memorial Day to those who died for our great country. Actually, not to those who died for our great country. He should have said to those who died for our great country and put a period. Instead, he tooted his own horn. He tooted the horn of his administration and his own accomplishments and muddied the Memorial Day waters again. But this time it was clear he was talking about himself. Those who died would be very happy and proud with how good the country's doing today. Really? And then you sing your own praises? What the hell's wrong with him? Really? Now, I supported Trump to the hilt the first time around. If he's the nominee, I'll support him to the hilt this time. But it's stuff like this that makes people sick. I don't know what goes through the mind of someone who would put this out. Happy Memorial Day to all, but especially to those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for the country they love, and to those in line of a very different but equally dangerous fire, stopping the threats from within has nothing to do with Memorial Day. Nothing. Neither did the jobs numbers in 2018 have anything to do with Memorial Day. Nothing. It's just sad. It's really sad. That's why DeSantis has baggage, but it's baggage that's it's baggage that the nation will agree with. In other words, it's not baggage. The left paints it as baggage. The media paints it as baggage. They don't like his policies. They didn't like Trump's policies. But Trump gives them so much more fuel. And when it comes to independence and when it comes to women in many respects and other people, he's not going to get them the way DeSantis could get them. Because of garbage like this. Whatever. And he'll never change. He'll never change. And that's who he is. That's who he is. I met him in the early 80s, early to mid 80s, when he bought the United States Football League's New Jersey Generals. And I had lunch with him and Art Rush Jr., who is the host of the show I produce, sports show. Went up to his office, saw the wonderful, spectacular view from Trump Tower. We went to lunch in Trump Tower at right in the middle of the atrium there. They had a table right in the middle of the restaurant for us. We did our show from Trump Plaza in Atlantic City many, many, many times leading up to fights. I interviewed him not only for sports when I switched to politics. He was a regular with me on WOR. Every few weeks or so, he'd come on at Newsmax TV before he ran. After he announced and was running for president, I had him on several times. You know, I like him. But this is garbage. This is just garbage. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Nothing. There's nothing you can do. Now let's switch over to, if we can, since we're talking about the military, since we're talking about Memorial Day, two people who are dangerous in their own right. I mean, their views are dangerous, in my view. One is a Democrat and one is a Republican. Let's start with, if we can, this will be Gerald Nadler, who is from New York. He's a congressman. He's been a congressman forever. There was some question about his mental faculties being all there as well. And a reporter from Epoch Times caught up with him. Liam Cosgrove tweeted this out. Caught up with him, I guess, in the outside the house or in the halls of the house, Congress, whatever, and asked him about the F-16s that we're giving to Ukraine. And here's 299.
Are you concerned that they will enter into Russian territory, as there have been recent reports of Belgorod, the border city?
I'm not concerned. I wouldn't care if they did.
You wouldn't care if they went into Russia?
Nope.
Really? You would still support them?
Turnabout's fair play. I don't think they're going to do it in any large scale. But why should Russia feel that they can invade somebody else and have total safety at home?
Well, but that would cross the line to a U.S.-sanctioned invasion of Russia by
Ukraine. You don't have to sanction it.
Well, you would be providing the weapons that conducted it, is what I'm saying. Is if the
We're not providing it for that purpose. I said I personally wouldn't mind.
So this is a congressman who says publicly, I wouldn't mind if Ukraine used the F-16s and bombed Russia. When one of the conditions, which is to me just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, what is it? How do you put conditions on it? What if Ukraine gets desperate? What, they're just going to say, oh boy, we'd love to take those F-16s and go inside Russia, but we promised Joe we're not going to do it, so we can't. Yeah, really, right. So this clueless jerk says, wouldn't bother me if they did it. Wouldn't bother me if they did it. I don't think they will, he says, but that turnabout is fair play. And that turnabout, these are our weapons that we know, if they're used inside Russia, will risk World War III. And that's why Biden originally said, no way. And now I guess he doesn't care the people that are telling him what to do don't care. Maybe World War III would be advantageous to them, they feel. So they gave in and gave them the F-16s, or are giving them the F-16s. And about the fear that what if they're used inside Russia? Well, Jerry Nadler says, I wouldn't care. You wouldn't care. World War III. And he didn't understand the question. The reporter said, well, that would seem like we're sanctioning. We don't have to sanction anybody. No, not put sanctions on. In other words, that would appear to Russia that we gave the okay. That's what he meant by sanctioning it. Oh, God. Oh, the people running this country. Okay. The other person who really scares me is Lindsey Graham, Republican senator, of course. And he just feels that we gotta give everything to Ukraine. Everything. He was on Fox News Sunday yesterday, and here he is talking about Ukraine, and here's 302.
Here's how it ends. I want to end the war in Ukraine by defeating Putin. The counteroffensive is afoot right now. In the last 400-something days, the Ukrainians have defied every expectation. They've weakened and bloodied the Russian army inside of Ukraine. I expect major gains in the coming days and weeks. The Ukrainians have had a weapon called the Storm Shadow provided by the British that's wreaking havoc on the Russians. They need longer-range rockets called ATACMs, and they need cluster munitions to defeat the Russians. I think they can expel Russia from Ukraine. I want the war to end, but in 2014, we did a deal with Putin, giving him the Crimea. What happened? He invades to try to take the whole country. If you want to end the war in Ukraine, which I do, defeat Putin.
Defeat Putin. Defeat Russia. Ukraine is going to defeat Russia with all their nuclear weapons. Russia's going to say one day, oh, we give up. Putin will wave the white flag, beg for forgiveness. Yes, Zelensky, we love your sweatshirt that you wear. Yes, we're scared of you because you wear a sweatshirt. Yes, you see the white flag? We're waving it. We'll give you whatever you want. That's insanity. And again, that's risking World War III. That's not saying we need an end to the conflict. That's saying, oh, yeah, the conflict will end when we beat Russia. Please, you're not going to beat Russia. I'm sorry. Just not going to happen. And anybody with a brain kind of knows that. I don't care how this battle's going and that battle's going and this offensive is coming and that offensive is coming. When push comes to shove, Russia could annihilate Ukraine in about 10 seconds. You're not going to beat Putin. This is scary talk. Here's 303.
I want to end it so we don't have more war. If you let Putin get away with this, China will take Taiwan. I wanted out of Afghanistan, but I didn't want to give the country back to the Taliban. So to all the smart people out there, the best thing you can do is give Ukraine the ability to evict the Russians, to liberate their territory. They're not asking for one soldier. They're asking for weapons and technology, and it is in our national security interest to make sure they can beat Putin, and they on the verge of driving the Russians out, so we need to keep helping them. All of our allies need to be all in and helping Ukraine. They can win this. They can liberate their territory with American help, and nobody's talked about how we're going to help Ukraine win against Russia. I am talking about it. They can do it. They're on the verge of a major counteroffensive that needs support.
You think there's a reason nobody's talking about it, Lindsey? You think there's a reason? Because it's insane. Insane. Now here's a question to Lindsey Graham, and here's cut 304.
Well, let me ask you about this quickly, because Republicans and Democrats on the Hill have openly expressed concerns about our inability to help other places that need us. Taiwan, we've got billions in back-ordered weaponry and those kinds of things. Defense News says this, Ukraine's consumption of U.S.-supplied materiel is outstripping the capacity of American defense firms to quickly replenish it. Center for Strategic and International Studies report last month found that the U.S. defense industrial base is unprepared for a notional battle with China over Taiwan. How do we manage that? Yeah.
Well, number one, you don't pass a defense budget below inflation. We are overmatched. We do need more weapons. But letting Putin dismember Ukraine and get away with industrial sized war crimes gives you more war, not less. If Putin is allowed to win when he can lose, if we do the right thing, there goes Taiwan. If you don't see the connection between Ukraine and China, you're missing a lot.
So let me get this straight. China is just going to wait around and, I mean, and see how this goes. China is lacks such self-confidence and such military might. They're lacking in that, too, that they're saying, oh, should we? Well, you know, let's see if Russia could pull this one out. And boy, if they beat Putin, ooh, we better not go near Taiwan. Really? This is nothing. One has, in my view, I'm sorry, one has nothing to do with the other. In fact, the question was asked and correctly pointed to Lindsey Graham, the fact that we're giving Ukraine all these weapons, not just the F-16s, tanks and everything else, we're running short. We're running short for ourselves. We're running short for Taiwan. So how does Lindsey Graham say, well, you know, if Ukraine gives in and doesn't defeat Putin, then China will take Taiwan. We can't arm Taiwan the way we want to because we don't have the weapons. We don't have the weapons for ourselves because we're giving them all to Ukraine. This is crazy, crazy talk and crazy stuff. And I'm telling you, what it's risking. It is risking World War III. Now, Lindsey Graham might not give a rat's behind, and Gerald Nadler might not give a rat's behind, but it's scary stuff. It really, really is. Now, you want more scary stuff? This is the state of our nation today. This is the person that was picked by, I think the students get to pick at the City University of New York, also known as CUNY, the CUNY Law School commencement, the graduation ceremony for CUNY Law School. A vile, vicious young lady from watching her was chosen to speak. Her name is Fatima Muhammad. Apparently, the year before, there was someone who was similar in nature, similar in what appears to be disdain for this country. But this one is even Fatima Muhammad. I read that she's worse than the other one was, and the other one was pretty bad. So let's sit back and give a listen to the woman who's been chosen by her peers at CUNY Law School, a woman who will be a lawyer, chosen by all her fellow students who will be lawyers. And she got applause for what you're about to hear. This is not the whole speech. This is part of it. Here is cut 307.
Like many of you, I chose CUNY School of Law for its articulated mission to be law in the service of human needs. One of very few legal institutions created to recognize that the law is a manifestation of white supremacy that continues to oppress and suppress people in this nation and around the world. We joined this institution. We joined this institution to be equipped with the necessary legal skills to protect our communities, to protect the organizers fighting endlessly day in and out with no accolades, no cameras, no votes, no PhD grants, working to lift the facade of legal neutrality and confront the systems of oppression that wreak violence on them. Systems of oppression created to feed an empire with a ravenous appetite for destruction and violence. Institutions created to intimidate, bully, and censor and stifle the voices of those who resist.
I wish I was kidding. I wish it was April 1st and this was an April Fool's joke. This is not, you know, this is not a Black Lives Matter rally or a Palestinian rally, which we'll get to in a second. This is the person, again, chosen by her peers to give the commencement speech for students at the graduation at CUNY Law School. And our laws are a manifestation of white supremacy. When you start on that premise, you got no law and order. You got nothing. These are the kinds of people that are coming out of colleges, universities, whatever. These are the kind of people who have become teachers and lawyers and people in charge of different things, politicians. They've been coming out like this for years. And that's why we are where we are as a country. Here's cut 308.
In this moment, in this moment of celebrating who we are, I want to celebrate CUNY Law as one of the few, if not the only law school, to make a public statement defending the right of its students to organize and speak out against Israeli settler colonialism. That this is the law school that passed and endorsed BDS on a student and faculty level. Recognizing that absent a critical imperialism, settler colonialism lens, our work and this school's mission statement is void of value. That as Israel continues to indiscriminately rain bullets and bombs on worshipers, murdering the old, the young, attacking even funerals and graveyards, as it encourages lynch mobs to target Palestinian homes and businesses, as it imprisons its children, as it continues its project of settler colonialism, expelling Palestinians from their homes, carrying the ongoing Nakba, that our silence is no longer acceptable.
There you go. There you go. That's why I mentioned Palestinians. Oh my God. Is this country in trouble? Can you imagine? You know, where's Joe Scarborough tomorrow morning playing this and saying, "And she hates this country," right? Where, and we're saying, where are the Democrats disputing this? Where is the left saying that this was inappropriate? Maybe they hate this country. Remember, because every time a Republican says something about what's going on in this country, by pointing it out, we hate this country. So here she is saying the laws are built on white supremacy and Israel's murdering worshipers and children and graveyards and blah, 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 blah. And nobody says boo. Nobody says boo. We got one more from Fatima Muhammad at CUNY Law School. God help us all. Here's cut 309.
We did all of this in spite of the racism, in spite of the selective activism, the self-serving interests of CUNY Central, an institution that continues to fail us, that continues to train and cooperate with the fascist NYPD, the military, that continues to train IDF soldiers to carry out that same violence globally, a larger institution committed to its donors, not to its students.
It's interesting. If I heard her right, she said that the NYPD is training IDF, Israeli Defense Force soldiers. I thought it was the other way around, that the left usually cries that the IDF has trained NYPD. Who cares? Who cares? They're two fascist groups, right? NYPD evil, IDF evil. Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. We are a country really on the brink. I mean, how much longer can we go on with this? How much longer? With this being the product of our schooling, I'm telling you, and medical schools with quotas and not only that, but equity. You got to have equity in the way you practice medicine. I mean, it's a total insane asylum. All of this. And that's where we're living in. That's what we're living in. That's where we are. All right, folks, believe it or not, we have one final segment left in the hour. We'll come back and do it. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Florida isn't as conservative as it would have you believe, and neither is Texas. And in both instances, it's the same root cause. Republicans doing the bidding of Democrats as part of the Uniparty. After his drunken disaster earlier in the week, Texas House Speaker Wade Fallon led the impeachment against State Attorney General Ken Paxton, primarily because he was the biggest thorn in Obama's side and is currently the biggest thorn in Joe Biden's side. Paxton has been fending off spurious charges regarding financial dealings, personal dealings, etc., for almost a decade. Voters have had three opportunities to choose someone else, and they have resoundingly brought Ken Paxton back each and every time. The Senate trial is not expected to be the same cockamamie, corrupt kangaroo court proceeding as occurred in the House on Friday, and Paxton is finally expected to be vindicated. But this entire episode is People's Exhibit number one as to why Texans need to start voting smarter when they pull that R lever. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Are our love bugs and companions. They are our pets, our family, and they make life better. When we face unexpected challenges, so do our pets. That's why we're on a mission to support people and their pets. Whether donating a bag of kibble, sharing an Instagram post of a lost cat, or welcoming a foster pet into your home, every bit of kindness counts. Visit petsandpeopletogether.org to learn how to be a helper in your community. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks. So I know, you know, this isn't a sports show, but every once in a while I do talk about it. History could have been made tonight. Never in the history of the National Basketball Association has a team gone down 3-0 in a best-of-7 playoff series, and then come back to win the next 4 and win the series. Never. Never, ever. Now, there have been a few, I think maybe 3 or 4, maybe, teams that were down 3-0 and came back and won the next 3 in a row. But until tonight, that 7th game, the deciding game, was always played on the home court of the other team. In other words, throughout the NBA's history, whenever it's happened, very rarely, like I said, 3 times before tonight or something like that, it's always been the team that was down 3-0, they came back and won the next 3 and forced a 7th and deciding game, but that 7th and deciding game was never on the home court of the team that had come back. It was always on the home court of the team that had won the first 3, and they had the advantage, and they always won the home court advantage. Well, tonight, the Boston Celtics had a chance to make history. They lost the first 3 games, even though they were a higher seed, to the Miami Heat. They weren't even close games, really. I mean, they lost the first 3 games. They were down 3-0. And they won the 4th game, 3-1. And they won the 5th game at home, 3-2. And 2 nights ago, they won the 6th game in Miami, 3-3. Tonight, game 7, the first time ever that the team that was down 3-0 would have the 7th and deciding game played in their home court. So Boston was playing at home, having won the last 3 games after being down 3-0, looking to become the first NBA team ever to come back from a 3-0 deficit and win a playoff series. Well, folks, sports is a funny thing. It is a real funny thing. Because from the beginning, the Miami Heat were dominant. The Boston Celtics scored 15 points in the first quarter, their lowest point total in the first quarter all season long. And they got demolished by the Miami Heat, 103-84. At home in Boston, Boston lost with a chance to become the first team ever to accomplish that four in a row after going down, losing the first three. They didn't do it. And to show you how rare and hard it is to do in Major League Baseball, there's only been one team in the playoffs, that have ever come back again in a seven-game series to win it after losing the first three. Once. And that was the Boston Red Sox over the New York Yankees. What was that? 04? Unbelievable. Just totally unreal that the Celtics got blown out tonight. Totally unreal. And in the National Hockey League, it's happened in the playoffs more than any other sport. It's happened in baseball once, never happened in basketball, obviously. But in the National Hockey League, I think it's happened three or four times where the team that lost the first three came back and won the next four. So it's much more doable in the NHL, I guess, than it is in the NBA, where it's never happened, and Major League Baseball, where it's happened once. How do you figure? Who would you have bet on? Well, Boston lost the first three. Then they won the next one in Miami. Then they won the next one at home. Then they won the next one in Miami. Now they're coming home to make history. Are you kidding? Boom, get blown away. It wasn't even close. They just got blown away, 103-84. 103-84. Just shows you never know what's going to happen. You just never know. It's pretty insane. All right, so let me give you this one here. Where is this one here? Oh, okay. I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to. I had a story on this really crazy story. Let me give it to you real quick, okay? The Washington Post got a tip that two protesters were going to the National Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C. to deface. They smeared paint on a case that was holding something called the Little Dancer, age 14, back in April. Each of them has been charged. They each face 5 years in prison. It was all to draw attention to get Joe Biden to declare a climate emergency. Okay, lunatics, climate lunatics. But they told the Washington Post they were going to do it. And the Department of Justice, although they didn't charge the Washington Post or the reporters who showed up and videotaped it and posted it on the Washington Post website. They showed up to witness the crime. They posted the crime. They knew about the crime. But the DOJ, according to the Daily Caller, said members of the conspiracy had alerted the Washington Post, and two reporters from the Post recorded and photographed the offense. Additionally, other members of the conspiracy filmed and photographed the offense. Well, others besides the Post. But I'm sorry, shouldn't the Washington Post reporters, shouldn't they be charged? This has nothing to do with freedom of the press. A criminal calls you up and says, I'm going to go commit an act. I'm going to go commit a criminal act. Show up. Videotape it if you want. Post it on your news site if you want. And that's what the Washington Post reporters did. They didn't tell authorities this was going to happen. What if the guy said, we're going to murder somebody at the museum today? Make sure you're there. Bring your camera. Now, I know murder isn't defacing the same as defacing a sculpture or whatever, a case holding a sculpture. But a crime is a crime. Why should it be treated differently? So I think these two Washington, I think the Washington Post, whoever was alerted and whoever knew about it and didn't tell authorities, they should be charged. Throw them in jail for 5 years, too. Are you kidding? All right, folks. Tomorrow, God willing, we will do it again. Tell your friends, tell your enemies. And coming up next, don't go anywhere, Jason Olborn with Compass. I'm Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.